This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. The United States faces diverse and increasingly complex security challenges. Meeting the challenges of today as well as the emergent threats of tomorrow depends on having an Air Force that is properly resourced. To effectively organize, train, and equip a force that can meet the country's needs in air, space, and cyberspace at a time of fiscal challenges, the U.S. Air Force is seeking to eliminate unneeded expenditures and rebalance spending. Doing so will allow the Air Force to shift resources from overhead and support functions to force structure and future modernizations, while also streamlining operations across the enterprise. What is the U.S. Air Force doing to improve its financial operations, become more efficient, and control costs? How is the U.S. Air Force improving financial information and achieving audit readiness? And what is it doing to promote management and organizational excellence? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Dr. Jamie Morin, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Financial Management and Comptroller. Welcome, Dr. Morin.
Well, thank you very much. It's great to have a chance to be here and talk with you and your guests.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is John Vonglis. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Michael. Good to be back.
Dr. Morin, before we delve into specific initiatives, perhaps you could provide us with an overview of the history and mission of your office.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the Air Force Comptroller really dates back to the founding of the Air Force, which takes you back to 1947. And ever since we've had military, we've had paymasters to make sure the troops get paid. And ever since we've had the Air Force, we've had a need to account for and allocate the Air Force's money, the money that the taxpayer entrusts to us.
So operationally, could you give us a sense of what's the purview under your portfolio? What's the size of your budget? What's the size of your office? And how do you support the overall DoD mission?
So there's really three pieces to financial management in the Air Force. The first piece is the budget execution and development and justification to the Congress. And the Air Force budget amounts to $119 billion in the requests that we've sent to Congress for fiscal year 2012. So it's a pretty hefty chunk of money. That budget is worked by a key part of my operation under a major general in the Air Force. We then also have a second shop that is responsible for the actual accounting and our financial operations. That means the process of making sure folks get paid on time and correctly, and then recording all of the funds that we do spend. That's our budget, our financial operations shop. Then we have a third part that's absolutely critical today, especially as budgets are beginning to come down. That's our cost and estimating operation. And those folks play a really important role in our acquisition programs. Their job is to provide the unbiased external assessment of what a program's actually likely to cost, not necessarily buying into some of the over-promising and under-delivering that can sometimes happen in big acquisition programs, providing an independent set of eyes that says, well, we've looked at history, we've looked at how this program's structured, we've looked at the details of how it's going to deliver, and you know, we think it might be a little more. Or sometimes we think it might be a little less.
So your office is a very important mission support function. Could you tell us a little bit about your specific role leading that office? What are your specific responsibilities and duties?
Well, the day-to-day is really as the right hand to the Secretary of the Air Force and the Chief of Staff of the Air Force as they try to make the resource allocation and execution decisions necessary to accomplish the Air Force mission, you know, to fly, fight, and win for our nation. So it is it's broadly diverse, and one day can be heavily focused on developing budget. Another day can be heavily focused on working with the Congress on specific provisions that we need in order to be more efficient, whereas other days can be much more long-term oriented. As we're working towards the goal of accelerating our audit readiness to 2014, for example, we have to take a very careful and deliberate approach looking at dozens and dozens of IT systems, looking at resources that need to be applied across the length and breadth of the Air Force, all around the world in a variety of functional organizations, everything from comptrollership to acquisition to logistics to the flight line. And so it is a tremendously diverse job and really just a great privilege to have it.
Dr. Morin, Jamie, if I may, regarding your responsibilities and duties, what do you see as your top challenges that you face in the position, and how are you addressing those challenges?
Well, I've alluded to a couple of them already. The ones I would focus on first and foremost are the necessity to get the maximum amount of combat capability out of each dollar the taxpayers entrust to us. Again, as we move to a time of maybe a little greater budget austerity, as the nation's grappling with a serious fiscal challenge, that responsibility is really always at the forefront of my mind. Deeply tied into that responsibility is the need to give the taxpayers a clean accounting of what funds we receive and how we expend them. And Secretary Panetta has been tremendously engaged on that effort, which has really helped build significant momentum, working very closely with Undersecretary of Defense Hale and with my senior leadership, as well as partners across the Air Force. We've been pressing forward on the audit readiness effort, and we've had some significant accomplishments. A third priority that is really key is that reinvigoration of the cost estimating capability of the Air Force. That's an area that unfortunately had deteriorated somewhat in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it left us at a bit of a disadvantage when it came to putting clean, clear eyes on promises that were being made to us and led to some excessive cost growth in some of our major acquisition programs. We really can't tolerate that level of cost growth in the environment we're in now. So that reinvigoration is key. The fourth one has to be the financial management workforce that is so critical to accomplishing all those other goals. We have a tremendously talented team of civilians and military, really about 13,000 people working financial management in the Air Force at any one time, and they're enormously committed to their work. As the world changes, we continue to need them to develop new skills, to deepen their skills. In an environment where a clean audit is a necessity, we need to make sure we're not just developing and fostering the improvement of a portion of that workforce, but really all of them, because a weak link can really hurt you when it comes to that.
Switching subjects a little bit, could you describe for our listeners your career path and how you began and what brought you to your current role?
Goodness, I'm a recovering academic, I'd say. I've been deeply engaged and interested in national security issues my whole life. My bachelor's was at Georgetown studying international security. I went to the London School of Economics and had a chance to take a master's degree there in public policy and public administration. Got the academic bug there, I think, and decided I would go straight on to a PhD. Yale was gracious enough to give me a fellowship that let me go there. I ended up with the Senate Budget Committee. Had a chance to work for a great member, Senator Kent Conrad of North Dakota, chairman of the committee, and he gave me the opportunity to handle the defense, the intelligence, and the foreign affairs budgets for the committee. I was, again, very lucky to have the chance to move over into the administration and take this position as the chief financial officer for the Air Force, which is obviously a humbling one, but a tremendous opportunity.
Well, given your merging of the theory and practice, what are the essential characteristics of an effective leader? And who has influenced your leadership style and management approach?
You know, my approach to leadership is, I would describe it as collaborative. You know, all wisdom doesn't rest in any one head. It certainly doesn't rest in mine in its entirety. And I try to listen a lot more than I talk. when we're in decision-making situations. And then I try to be an articulate spokesman for the decisions that emerged from a collaborative discussion. That is one style of leadership. There's obviously many others, and many others can be effective. But it tends to be my personal approach. I also think it's very important, especially in stressful times, for leaders to bring a little humor to the business. And we're working in the Air Force on high-stakes issues. We're working on issues that affect billions of dollars of taxpayer money. We're working on issues that affect the lives of American service members and vital national security interests at home and abroad. So they're serious issues, and they need to be taken seriously. But when you're for 12 hours in a day moving from one extremely serious issue to another, I think it is important to inject a little humor.
How is the U.S. Air Force improving financial information and achieving audit readiness? We will ask Dr. Jamie Morin, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Financial Management, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What are the seven management imperatives all government executives need to know? How is DoD improving its business operations? What is FAA's Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextJet? How is New York City shaping a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? And what about power, security, and leadership in the 21st century? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Jamie Morin, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Financial Management. Also joining us from IBM is John Bonglis. Dr. Morin, financial management capabilities play an integral role in ensuring that the Air Force builds, maintains a force that can fly, fight, and win. To that end, would you highlight your strategic goals and management principles that frame your strategic plan? What are some of the key financial management goals, and how are you aligning to the key priorities of the Air Force?
So let me start with the Air Force goals, because everything needs to flow down from that. Our Air Force leadership, Secretary Mike Donnelly and our Chief of Staff, General Norton Schwartz, have laid out, really throughout their tenure, five consistent goals that are non-negotiable for the Air Force. And that starts with continuing to strengthen the Air Force nuclear enterprise. You may know we had some significant turmoil in the Air Force with some unfortunate lapses about 3.5 years ago. The second goal is to support the joint team in today's fight, as we're drawing down in Iraq and as we're continuing operations in Afghanistan, there's huge importance in the roles the Air Force plays there and our ability to save lives on the ground, achieve vital national security objectives. That's got to come right at the top. The other goals that they've laid out include caring for our people, our airmen and our families, and developing them to make them the best they possibly can. And then to recapture acquisition excellence. Again, the Air Force had some tough times in years past with acquisition of major systems, both in terms of cost growth and in some contract protests. And finally, and enabled by that acquisition excellence, is a goal of modernizing our airspace inventories and also the organizations and systems that support them. So the Air Force has a lot of aging aircraft. Everything from tankers that date to the 1950s, the B-52 also dates to that period, as well as satellites, many satellites that are reaching the end of their life on orbit. So we're watching those closely and working aggressively to recapitalize those key programs, because each of those offers capabilities that the nation depends on. You know, it's unclear, I think, to a lot of folks just how many Air Force capabilities the nation depends on. Every GPS satellite flown by airmen, designed under Air Force contracts, that's a vital capability the nation depends on. Communications for almost our entire government national command chain, Air Force satellites, these are key capabilities. And so the Air Force financial management strategy and goals need to be aligned to support those key Air Force goals. Where we see our most direct and aggressive play is in the areas of acquisition excellence, modernizing the inventories, and of course, caring for our people. On the nuclear enterprise, we're resourcing that very directly, aggressively, making sure that we're not always 2 years behind, which can often happen in the budget business as it takes time to start programs. And then when it comes to today's fight, we are striving to be very responsible stewards of the taxpayer dollar without compromising rapid response to warfighter need, rapid response to the needs of the troops in the field and the airmen flying, fighting around the world. So to put a little capsule around that, I would say that Air Force financial managers need to get better at every part of our operations. We need to do a better job of formulating budgets so we squeeze the maximum amount of combat capability out of each dollar entrusted to us. We need to do a better job of enabling good acquisition decisions by getting our cost estimating right. And we need to continue to earn the confidence of the taxpayer that we're good stewards of their resources by clearly, cleanly accounting for the resources they give to us.
Congress requires DOD achieve audit readiness by 2017, and recently I understand that Secretary Panetta accelerated this timeline to 2014. First, would you elaborate on the Air Force's efforts in financial improvement and audit readiness? What are some of the core focus areas of your efforts, and how does moving the date up 3 years affect your overall approach, and does it require you to restructure it?
Secretary Panetta has set us a challenge, and he's laid out, by 2014, He said you need to have audit readiness for some particular segments, he said, of the statement of budgetary resources are accounting for the dollars the taxpayer gives to us. Strikes me as a reasonable thing to ask. It does require us to relook some of our planning because the plan the Air Force had built to get to the legal deadline of 2017 was heavily dependent on fielding modernized financial information systems as well as modernized logistics systems, personnel systems, and several others. Our ability to get to an assertion of audit readiness by 2014 requires us to continue to press forward on those systems modernizations, but also focus heavily on compensating controls, because we know for a fact that all the necessary systems will not be in place by 2014. And there are cases where you can apply brute force, things like manual reconciliations between systems that don't yet successfully or reliably interface. You can apply that sort of brute force to solve system failings. But we're examining that closely right now. Secretary Panetta has given us a 60-day study task that we are about halfway through now. And we're working closely with Mr. Bob Hale, our DOD comptroller, to build a department-wide approach that will get us to that 2014 deadline. There is risk involved, and we will be applying additional resources to mitigate those risks. Our strategy, the change in our strategy to deal with the accelerated deadline, I think centers on recognizing that we have to move more processes to parallel effort rather than serial. We can't take one task after another. We need to push on a whole range of tasks at once. Key to that effort is getting buy-in and aggressive pushes from a wide range of functional stakeholders across the Air Force. Toward that end, we sat down with the Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Manpower and Reserve Affairs, who was very eager to understand exactly how he and his organization could help push us towards some necessary systems improvements and, more importantly, some key process improvements in how we handle personnel. We have to push on a number of buttons all at once here, and I have gotten extremely good support so far from my counterparts, the lieutenant generals that run a variety of the deputy chief of staff organizations on the Air Force headquarters, as well as the civilian assistant secretaries and senior career folks that make the Pentagon run. Excellent support in response to this aggressive but important deadline that the Secretary of Defense has laid out for us.
Obviously, it is critical to have proper governance structures in place to make sure that you're executing and that you're managing progress appropriately and, of course, assessing accountability. Toward that end, could you tell us a little more about the governance structures you have put in place?
Absolutely. I'm largely working within a governance structure that predates me, but that I'm happy with and that I've sought to invigorate and rely on. We have a very deliberately constructed cross-functional governance structure that's actually jointly chaired by me and the Deputy Chief Management Officer of the Air Force. And we, from the head of a table, work with a organization of senior civilians and senior military folks that represent really all the interested functional communities, but also key partners from outside the Air Force, the Defense Finance and Accounting Service, for example, the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Comptroller, the Deputy Chief Financial Officer of DOD is part of our governance. We have advisory involvement and observer status from the auditor. These layers of involvement are very important. And we nest beneath that top-level governance structure, that executive steering group that we have, two additional layers getting down to the working level of the audit readiness effort, again, with that cross-functional representation, which is so key. We have moved in our focus teams that are doing our planning under this 60-day review that Secretary Panetta has ordered. We've moved to even more direct involvement from the field, bringing in representatives of key major commands out in the Air Force, and also perspectives from truly where the rubber meets the road at base level. So that's key to the change management process of accelerating a timeline that, as you know, had been built very deliberately and carefully over many years.
Given the scale of some of these operations, what do you think some of the major challenges that you could talk about or obstacles facing the Air Force in its efforts to improve financial information and audit readiness?
So let me draw a couple of lessons before I get to the challenge. We've had some key successes recently, and they've been successes in areas that are perhaps easier. I don't want to say they're easy because they were substantial challenges to get across, but they were areas that were more narrowly within the financial world. So in just the last few months, we've received clean audit opinions from independent public accounting firms on two significant financial processes. One is our distribution of funds, the funds that we have appropriated to us by the Congress out to our commands. And the second is for our funds balance with Treasury reconciliation. Now, that's gobbledygook to most people, but that's basically balancing our checkbook with the Treasury. It's a checkbook with 1.1 million transactions a month. And so we balance that now on a monthly basis with 99.97% of transactions being matched up successfully. So big step. But again, both of those are sort of in accounting lanes, if you will, accounting and budget lanes. Our key challenges ahead of us, as I've alluded to before, are stretching beyond that to the areas that are touched by so much broader elements of the Air Force and of the Department of Defense as a whole, working our logistics issues to get to a clean opinion on our military equipment. We're working right now to bring in an auditor to look at that. That's a project that has been underway for several years and is finally coming to fruition. To get to success there will require active support from folks around the Air Force because we don't keep all the airplanes in the Pentagon. The logistics system more broadly is a huge challenge we've got to work with. And it's a challenge primarily because the Air Force is just so big and so geographically distributed and so mission-focused that the paperwork doesn't always catch up with mission accomplishment. And so through systems modernizations, through process improvements, through increased attention to detail, we're pressing forward on that. As we look to building a long-term, sustainable, effective and efficient financial management enterprise in the Air Force, enabling a more effective and efficient overall Air Force enterprise, I think the biggest challenges are systems modernization, process change, and building the new skills that our folks need in that new environment. To be frank, we've worked in an environment of 1970s era bookkeeping systems. Using them requires a very different set of skills than operating in a modern financial environment with a whole different set of internal controls, a whole different set of systems configurations and interfaces, more sophisticated accounting. So those are bringing our people from that very old, oftentimes painful environment into the new is a key challenge as well.
So let's talk a little bit about DEEMS and other financial system modernization efforts that are going. Again, I think the recurring theme here, and not only in the interview, but throughout the grander fiscal problem that we're facing, are challenges. And what do you think remains to be done?
Well, so DEEMS is our next generation accounting system, and it has been a project that's been underway for several years now. And it was in a pilot status for quite some time, and then we've moved to what I'd call a technology demonstration status. But I'm pleased to report that for 2 years running now, it has been the accounting system of record at one of the Air Force's most important bases, Scott Air Force Base, where our Air Mobility Command is headquartered, where the U.S. Transportation Command is headquartered, and where a whole bunch of operational activities take place. So the fact that we've been able to use this system to successfully run the finances of that base and numerous organizations there for 2 years is a very good step. We've been taking a deliberate approach here and focusing on getting that system to a level that our customers and our users can trust in and can have confidence that they're able to accomplish their full workload, their full mission, knowing that we can't throw more people at inefficient processes in this environment of more austere budgets.
What are you doing to communicate the message of the successes that you're making with your audit readiness and financial improvement goals? How are you getting it out to the larger community, larger Air Force community?
Well, so we're communicating to a whole range of audiences, and I have to get in a shameless plug. I am now the first Air Force comptroller on Facebook and Twitter. So I'm trying to communicate with the financial management workforce, those 13,000 folks that have to actually make this happen. That's a key audience because, frankly, at base level and at command level, when people have questions about this sort of stuff, those are the people they turn to. But so we're communicating with those folks. I mentioned earlier the discussion I had at the Air Force Corona conference with the assembled four-star leadership of the Air Force. That was a key communications opportunity. You know, one of the lessons that I've drawn is that you've got to very carefully balance two pieces in communicating complex issues to large audiences. One of them is consistency of message. The old saw that repetition is the heart of communication. But the second is responsiveness to changed circumstances, because credibility is important. And repeating the same message when it's been overtaken by events will kill your credibility real fast. So I try to balance those. I try to be firm, forthright, and fair in my assessment of situations while also trying to relate it in concrete terms to what airmen on a flight line can anticipate in the future environment in terms of how they get paid, how they get handled when they travel and need a reimbursement. But also put it in terms that make sense to commanders, that this is about getting them timely, reliable information on which to make decisions without manual pulls of data, without six different answers to one question from six different organizations that have a stake. Those are the sort of things that drive managers crazy. And so having timely, reliable, authoritative information on your financial status is a no-brainer for a manager.
What is the Air Force doing to improve its financial operations, become more efficient, and control costs? We will ask Dr. Jamie Moran, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Financial Management, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is FAA's Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextGen? How is the U.S. Department of Homeland Security turning its one DHS vision into a reality? What is New York City doing to shape a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient? And how is the DoD improving its business operations? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. Hear from FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, DHS Undersecretary for Management Raphael Boris, New York City Deputy Mayor for Operations Stephen Goldsmith, and Dave Winogrand, Assistant Deputy Chief Management Officer at DoD. Professor Joseph Nye and General Anthony Zinni on power, security, and leadership in the 21st century, and seven management imperatives that government leaders should pursue to be successful in an era of fiscal constraint. All of this and so much more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Jamie Morin, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Financial Management. Also joining us from IBM is John Bonglis. Jamie, I'd like to turn to internal controls. Being a good steward of taxpayers' money requires having a rigorous internal control system. Could you elaborate on how you're embedding and maturing an internal control model within your organization? And what are some of the key challenges you face in this area?
Well, we're trying to take a very empirical approach to internal controls that emphasizes real-world testing. And that involves challenging our conceptions about where they're effective and where they're not. We have a very disciplined process of preparing an annual statement of assurance for the Secretary of the Air Force to provide to the Secretary of Defense each year. But the true internal control environment really does require poking, prodding, seeing where policies are being strictly adhered to, where there may be some sloppiness. So we've been working to increase the rigor of our inspections to find whether our quality assurance team is catching any deviations from process. That's a key part of our internal control effort. I would also say systems modernization is key to our enhancement of internal controls because so many of our legacy systems lack the edit controls and limitations that a modern financial or logistics system would have. So as we move to these modern systems, we will be able to catch problems more readily. Interestingly, though, the process of deploying some of these new systems has also brought to light some of the existing deficiencies in ways that are helpful. For example, when we import data from legacy financial or non-financial systems into our new accounting system, DEAMS, we often get numerous items that are rejected because they don't fit the expected data types. And that lets us look back and find areas where, again, adherence to process or policy isn't quite right. We've found that with other areas where we've fielded new systems or capabilities as well. And that's, frankly, been helpful for me as a diagnostic tool, bringing things to light that otherwise might have stayed below the radar screen. In general, I can say the Air Force has a strong internal control environment. We've got financial management personnel who are deeply committed to stewardship. But it's an organization of hundreds of thousands of people managing billions of dollars. And so there's always room for improvement in that stewardship and building a more rigorous control environment that is still conducive to conducting the mission. Of course, we can't put handcuffs on every transaction. We can't tie down an airplane or else it can't fly.
Jamie, let's talk a little bit about acquisition, since it is a significant aspect of the enterprise, the Air Force in this case, and that I think we'd all agree it's very important to get acquisition right. In that regard, could you elaborate a bit on your role in improving the Air Force acquisition, the relationship, the context, and how specifically are you working to improve cost estimating, perhaps proactively, as well as strengthening program control capabilities?
Mm. You've hit on two of the key parts that I'm working very hard. And Air Force Financial Management has a key role in the Air Force's overall acquisition improvement plan, which has been a multi-year effort to advance the Chief of Staff and the Secretary of the Air Force's key priority of recapturing acquisition excellence. Our role in that is focused primarily on that cost estimating piece, but also on broader acquisition financial management. Of course, each major acquisition program has a chief financial officer of its own that is responsible for managing the budgetary resources in the program, for ensuring that fiscal law principles are followed to the letter, and ensuring generally the efficient use of resources. So let me turn first to cost estimating and then talk about program control in a little more detail. The cost estimating piece is a challenge in terms of building organizational capacity, and that's organizational capacity at headquarters, but also out at each of the program offices that's responsible for running our major programs. That involves getting the right people, and we still have a long way to go on that, simply because the Air Force runs so many programs. We have many, many small programs, and then quite a few extremely large ones, like the F-35 and the Next Generation Bomber and some of our key satellite systems. We have a responsibility to ensure that each of those programs has a fully qualified, credentialed cost estimator on its rolls in order to provide the advice to the program manager that they need to have a good negotiating position with the contractor, to bring credible estimates in for any adjustments to the program that have to occur, and to help them through the acquisition process, which can sometimes seem a little Byzantine. So we're working to increase that staffing. And again, to be very frank, that workforce was drawn down dramatically in the late 90s and early 2000s. And there's a good ways to go to bring folks in and to bring folks in and get them the experience and education they need to be fully effective. But Mr. Rich Hartley, who runs the Air Force Cost Analysis Agency, he's truly a phenomenal leader in that community with deep respect across the whole of government in the cost estimating community. You also mentioned program control. And program control is it's an office within an acquisition program office. It's a capability within an acquisition program office that I like to refer to as the heartbeat of the program office, or the metronome. They are responsible for the schedule, for the budget, for much of the management support within that program office. It's an absolutely key position. And unfortunately, over the years, Air Force financial managers, while retaining officially functional responsibility for that, had largely abandoned it. We have been working very closely with our colleagues in Air Force acquisition to rebuild there, because in a very complicated world where our acquisition program managers work nowadays, with so many competing demands on the programs, difficult, challenging legislative environment, difficult, challenging budgetary environment, having good folks in that role is critical. And so we're working to vector some high-flying officers and civilians into those roles. We're also working to give them the tools they need to succeed.
The theme, again, we go back to challenges and pressures and economic pressures and fiscal responsibility and all, I guess, all we've been talking about throughout the interview. Maybe we could distill it to the question or the comment about department-wide cost-cutting efforts, and those specifically within the Air Force, to realize savings, to look at business operations in a more efficient manner. Could you talk a little bit about the key initiatives being pursued along those lines?
Well, the Air Force is been very aggressive in seeking to find efficiencies and savings. As you probably know, we identified over $33 billion in five-year savings as part of the 2012 President's Budget submission just within the Air Force. That's a big chunk of resources, and those were resources that we were able to redirect to higher priorities, pull them out of support activities and lower priority efforts and move them to key areas like building a next-generation bomber aircraft in order to ensure that the Air Force and the United States as a whole has the ability to project power globally deep into this century. We've also looked across our personnel manning in order to ensure that we've got our organizations right-sized, that we've got reporting chains that make sense and aren't creating excess work, and that we have a total management structure that doesn't overwhelm the pointy end of the spear, which is sometimes a challenge in a bureaucratic organization. We're executing in the midst of fiscal year 2012 right now, but the efficiency plan that we laid out, the $33.3 billion that we found in efficiencies, are plans now, and they need to become reality. And they're going to become reality at base level, where financial managers and operational commanders have to work together to actually achieve the efficiencies. Some of them are stroke of a pen, right? We eliminate an organization and restructure and certain positions go away. And then as the personnel process works there, those savings accrue and you have to monitor and make sure mission still gets accomplished. But others of these require extensive, detailed implementation effort that's going to occur over a number of years. We've seen tremendous strides from our mobility forces to adopt some new techniques and technologies that will allow them to be much more fuel efficient, saving hundreds of millions of dollars. These are not trivial amounts of savings. So as we at the headquarters turn our attention to the next round of budget decisions and the decisions necessary to live within the more than $450 billion reduction in planned defense budgets that were laid in as a result of the votes this summer on the Budget Control Act that was passed over the summer. We need to ensure that we're also achieving those planned efficiencies that we built before, which are only coming to fruition just now.
Could you talk a little bit about the benefits, the pros and cons, when we look at approaches in terms of cost reductions, cost takeouts, cost cutting? Does an organization, do you think, benefit from some balance of targeted cuts versus a proverbial peanut butter or salami slice? And if so, could you cite some examples?
I'll tell you that I think targeted cuts are always the first preference. In a large and distributed organization, there are times when giving targets to subordinate organizations in order to develop their own targeted cuts is also a good approach. And we've tried to focus primarily on the former, with strategic targeted cuts identified at headquarters, rather than the latter, the salami slice or target issuing. But there is a role for both. Among the efficiency efforts that we have underway is one I'm managing, where we did provide some specific targets to our individual commands and allowed them to come up with their own proposals. That's a comparatively small portion of that $33.3 billion I mentioned. The majority of them are focused individual initiatives that need to be fleshed out and implemented at local levels, but where the strategic approach has been identified. Cost takeout is hard, though, and it's hard in a government organization where you have a lot of limitations on your freedom of action for good reasons. Prioritization is hard when, especially for a service like the Air Force, so much of the capability we provide to the nation is almost like a utility. You know, the satellite communications are relied upon by huge swaths of our defense establishment. The intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance capability that we're bringing to today's fight in Iraq and Afghanistan is relied upon by the whole joint team and other elements of government. We've tried to do those strategic choices as much as possible. There's always a little element of the salami slice, or I like to think of it more as providing targets. But it is a key effort that we're carrying out right now, this efficiency focus, and it's getting a huge amount of most senior management attention. And so that tends to push to true strategic choices rather than the salami slice.
Just a real quick question around Shared Services Center. I understand that several years ago, the financial management organization within Air Force introduced this concept, this model. Do you see yourself expanding the use and application of the Shared Services model across the Air Force? And where, what domains do you think that might work?
So we're applying shared services models where they make the most sense, and we're taking a very factual, empirical approach to it. Back in 2007, the Air Force stood up a financial services center aimed at providing consolidated backroom military and travel pay functions at a single site. And as we've observed the actual results with the center, we found that centralization of our manual travel pay, so this is people doing complex trips where they have to file a paper voucher for reimbursement because they're doing all sorts of wonderful things that our airmen do around the world, that centralization of that was a significant cost savings. We have found in practice that centralization of military pay transactions, which tend to be simpler and more document-driven, the centralization of those ended up not producing cost savings. So we're walking away from that centralization, returning the personnel that were doing that to base level where they can be in direct contact with their customer and provide the sort of direct hands-on support the customers need. Most of those are military personnel performing that role, which actually leads me to an important related point. In most organizations, the expectation would be that the financial operation, which is a support function, should be run as efficiently as possible, as with the minimum number of people required and so forth. In the military, it's a little different because financial personnel in the military are a support function, but they're not just a peacetime support function. So at any one time, we've got a couple hundred Air Force financial managers deployed overseas in combat zones, doing everything from carrying around bags of money to reimburse vendors when they're traveling with special operations forces in places where there's no infrastructure to support them, to dealing with deployed Army soldiers who have their own pay and entitlement questions while they're based in Iraq or Afghanistan. And that mission, which includes carrying weapons, being prepared to destroy records and currency if you're overrun by the enemy, that's a business that you can make somewhat more efficient, but you don't want to make it too efficient because you need a little surplus of capacity there just in case. You don't want to work on the ragged edge. So we're trying to simultaneously ensure that in a peacetime or a steady state contingency environment, we can very efficiently conduct our day-to-day business, but also that we have this latent capacity that if the nation needs hundreds of financial personnel to deploy on a moment's notice and do things like help reconstruct in Haiti after a devastating natural disaster, or assist in Japan in the aftermath of a tsunami, or deal with a pop-up hot shooting war, that we've got financial personnel who have that skill set as well, even if it's not the skill set that they're using in a day-to-day office environment.
What does the future hold for financial management within the U.S. Air Force? We will ask Dr. Jamie Morin, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Financial Management, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. Each edition of the Business of Government magazine has as its focus the core mission of the IBM Center, connecting research to practice as a means to improve public management. We do this by bringing together insights and perspectives blended with an equal measure of practicality and reflection from an array of government leaders, public managers, thinkers, and practitioners. Hi, I'm Michael Keegan, managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. In an era of fiscal contraction, today's leaders face unique challenges that present many difficult choices. It is a period that, while imposing many constraints, simultaneously confers as many opportunities to make a difference, introduce new ways of managing, explore pragmatic approaches, and pursue management imperatives that help government leaders perform in an ever-challenging, complex environment. In our latest edition, we bring you conversations with FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt, outlining the Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextGen. Raphael Boris, DHS Undersecretary for Management, discusses how the department is turning its one DHS vision into a reality. Stephen Goldsmith, Deputy Mayor for Operations for the City of New York, discusses how the city is shaping a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and efficient. We offer perspectives on power, security, and leadership in the 21st century from Professor Joseph S. Nye Jr. and General Anthony Zinni, former commander of the U.S. Central Command. Our forum presents seven management imperatives that government leaders must pursue to be successful in this new environment. All of this and so much more in the Spring-Summer 2011 edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order a free copy at businessofgovernment.org and find out how the business of government is not business as usual. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Dr. Jamie Morin, Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Financial Management. Also joining us from IBM is John Bonglis. So, Dr. Morin, I talk a lot with my guests about the use of collaboration and partnerships among agencies and the private sector to achieve mission results. I was wondering, how are you leveraging partnerships to improve management operations and program outcomes?
Well, the key area where we're focused on partnership right now is, of course, this audit readiness acceleration. Secretary Panetta's challenge to accelerate our assertion of audit readiness to 2014 has driven all the military services to look very rigorously at the plans we had built aimed at achieving the legal deadline of 2017 and figuring out how we can leverage one another's work even more aggressively and, equally importantly, how we can synchronize our work in order to make the job easier for one of our key partners, the Defense Finance and Accounting Service. The Army, the Air Force, the Navy, and the Marine Corps all have their own schedules, their own plans. We're all supported by the same folks at the Defense Finance and Accounting Service. And so given limited resources, that runs the risk of forcing them to prioritize everything at once, which of course means prioritizing nothing. We are working to synchronize our plans, mindful that you can't have complete synchronization if you're pressing aggressively towards a date. We each have to run our own race. But we need to hit some of the same pit stops along the way at the same time so that we're getting efficient support from that key partner. We're also very mindful of the fact that fundamentally most of our end-to-end business processes in defense financial management are similar, whether it's the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, the Marine Corps. We use different systems. We have some different processes at a micro level, But fundamentally, we are hiring people, paying them, retiring them. We're drawing some key lessons from the auditor reports that they've received and making sure we're triple-checking those same issues on our front so that we can learn from their mistakes and not make them ourselves to the maximum extent possible.
What do you think some key characteristics of an effective CFO would be in this role?
Oh, I'm not sure I'm equipped to opine on that. I have to ask my boss if I'm an effective CFO. I think building a consensus on issues but not being afraid to make decisions when required. I think a very frank and direct approach to problems. We need to not let problems fester, and they need to be addressed head on when they come up. I think there's a need to understand structuring of decisions. When you're making hundreds of decisions about a variety of disparate programs and efforts, the way you pull those decisions together, the order in which you address them, that all matters. That helps to determine the outcomes. CFOs need to be conscious of that and need to structure decisions in a way that advances strategic priorities rather than allow the pop-up issue of the moment to distract from a strategic priority. That's a lot easier to say than to do, but that's something we strive to do.
Well, clearly this is serious business and it's not easy, but given, and lastly from I think my set is the critical mission that the Air Force has and your office's requirements to have a probably more of a technical skill set and expertise. Could you describe a little bit for our listeners what you're doing to ensure that the workforce is technical and competent and ready to meet the challenges both of today and tomorrow?
Well, that's a great question, and that's something I've been working very closely with Mr. Hale on, our DOD comptroller. He and I have been working, along with our counterparts, on moving towards a certification program for defense financial managers that is loosely modeled on the acquisition workforce's programs under the APDP program, as it's referred to. We are seeking to build that level of credentialing and a common set of knowledge conveyed through key courses that will help our financial managers have the skills they need and the credibility they need to be effective in leading change as we move toward audit readiness and effective in balancing resources in a tricky environment. Some of the key principles that I keep in mind for that effort are that we've got to reach out and touch the whole force. We can't limit ourselves to just a handful. We can't limit ourselves to just the tip of the iceberg. We've got to get the whole iceberg or as near to it as possible. And that requires thinking about delivery models for training and education that get beyond just plopping people down in a classroom. It requires thinking about continuous learning over a lifetime or a full career, and it requires thinking about how to mentor and advise the civilian and military staff at each stage of their career. We have to continue to inculcate strong norms for career development and mentoring at every level, and it requires getting down to that first-line supervisor. We use a lot of different techniques to do that, but it's a critical effort if we're going to achieve the audit readiness and if we're going to be good stewards in a tough fiscal environment.
Jamie, I'd like to turn to the future, sort of your crystal ball, if you will. What are some of the major opportunities and perhaps challenges your organization will encounter in the future, and how do you envision evolving to meet those challenges?
There are a couple pieces I'd like to highlight. The first among them is that we are continuing to move towards more automation in some of our routine processes. I've talked about those 13,000 folks